So all these cases are child masters before his time.
Okay. And we're on case 45. So I'll read a case. I'll read the compiler's comments and then his poetic verse. So case 45, who is he? Grandmaster Yan of East Mountain said, "Even Shakyamuni and Maitreya are his slaves. Tell me, who is he?" The compiler woman said, "If you can see him clearly, it is like meeting your father at a crossroad. You don't have to ask someone else whether it's him or not." His verse. "Don't grasp anyone else's bow, bow and arrow bow. Don't ride on someone else's horse. Don't engage with someone else's misdeeds. And lastly, don't inquire into someone else's business." Mind your business, right? Okay, this case is right to the point. Very short, very succinct. Case 35 was also about this master. It's actually Fred's favorite koan. And the koan is, who is the real Qing? Qing Yu was a girl's name. So in that story, her soul departed. She lived a full life, married, with kids, while she was in a coma elsewhere. Which one was she? Right, that was case 35. Yeah. So, based on a very famous novel, Dongshan Fa Yan, in translation is, you know, the grandmaster Fa Yan. Sometimes the way people address monastics or practitioners, usually they have a Dharma name, right? Like this, in his case, it's Fa Yan. People address him by the second character only. And Dongshan means eastern mountain. So he's this master of that mountain. Teachers usually take up as part of their name for in later of, well, from the perspective of later generations. People usually associate master with a place. So he is Master Fa Yan of Eastern Mountain, Dongshan. So together, his Dharma name, Fa Yan, with his posthumous name, Dongshan, or Eastern Mountain. Right? For example, if I die, it would be, instead of Guo Gu, it would be Teacher Gu of Tallahassee. Right? The Gu of Tallahassee. Right? Something like that. So case 35 also involves Fa Yan. And he used that particular story to illustrate, to point to something that's so essential in our lives, the most essential thing in our lives. In case 35, it was, who is the real person in that story? And that story is a story of each and every one of you. You play this role in this situation. You have that role in life. You're a father, you're a son, you're a friend, you're a co-worker. Which one's you? You can live one role and have a whole full life. But yet, in another situation, you're someone else. Which one is it? All of us live our lives with different facades or different identities. We may think we have one fixed identity, but we don't. Our subjectivity lies in causes and conditions. Lies in, you may say, our interactions. Your friend, your father, your son, your student, your wife, your colleague. Which perspective is true? Which perspective is the real you? Are you simply someone like, oh, it's all of them are me. You know, I just wear different hats under different circumstances. Our sense of self is moment to moment to moment to momently constructed. Realized. Completed. And it continues to change. That's number 35. Here, Fa Yan, just point right straight to the question. There is someone in this room right now that Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya, Shakyamuni Buddha is the historical, original teacher of the whole Buddhist tradition. Right? Maitreya is the future Buddha. He's the next big honcho, right? There's someone in this room. Actually, there are many of them. That Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya bow down to. How do you say it? There's a slang, right? You ain't got nothing on me. You ain't got nothing on me. It's like this. Shakyamuni Buddha, Maitreya's got nothing on me. Who is that person? Now, you can, of course, give up yourself, give up your willingness to know who you are, and invest in some other things outside yourself. A supreme being, right? Or, you know, supreme being, you know, it's the originator of all things. You can, of course, give up on this and then place all your hope in that. But no matter what you do, if you do that, you will be forever enslaved. By what? This basic fundamental duality of not knowing who you are. This opposition. Right? Opposition of it or the big him, her, or being, and then you. Master Fa Yan, his own enlightenment experience, or what led him to pursue charm practice, has something to do with this. He came to the Dharma. He became a monk and practiced quite late in life. You can say midlife. 35 years old. You may not think 35 is old, but back then, 35 is old. People lived to maybe 60. Right? So, 35 years old, he become a monk. Studies very hard. Studies the Vinaya, the Buddhist monastic codes. Studies Buddhist doctrine. He focused on one particular school of doctrine. The mind-only school, Yogacara. And he came across a story of an earlier master who visited China, who was Chinese visited India. His name is Xuanzang. Xuanzang was the founder of the Yogacara school of Buddhism in China. And he pretty much began a whole school. At a time when there were still many, many texts, scriptures not translated into Chinese yet. So he himself went against the emperor's permission, against the law, escaped China to go to India and spend 20 years there, master Sanskrit, master the Buddhist languages, went to Central Asia, different parts of South Asia too, came back and developed a school. One occasion, it was the tradition of India in pre-modern time to engage in debate. That's one of the reasons why Buddhist traditions develop different philosophies, to win debates. If you lose, your whole community will be converted to the other opponent. So this one Buddhist temple was promoting this text. In Yogacara philosophy, there's one very key articulation of non-duality. A particular type of wisdom will arise when subject and object ceases to be in opposition. There's a particular name for it. So the opponent, the great teacher of a non-Buddhist sect, school, challenged this great monastery, his head. Says, if there's non-opposition, there's wisdom of non-duality, where there's no absence of subject, absence of object, who's having the wisdom? What is the wisdom for? No one could answer. And a visiting monk, a Chinese visiting monk, Xuanzang, answered it on behalf of the monastery. So it's like, of course, this is kind of Chinese hagiography promoting Chinese Buddhism, right? But in the historical records, it has it that he replied, it's like drinking water. Whether it's cold or hot, only a person who drinks it would know. And then supposedly, the opponent had nothing to come back. The opponent was speaking on a very abstract level of philosophy. Xuanzang responded in a very direct, experiential way. Who is it that experiences wisdom of non-duality? Do you drink water? Yeah. Water cold or hot? You know, right? Yeah. Okay then. That has something to do with this. Because in that instant, when Fa Yan heard the story, he was studying Yogacara very hard, came across that historical record, and he generated naturally a sense of great doubt, wanting to know, sense of wonderment. He says, drinking water, whether it's hot or cold, only the drinker will know. How does a drinker know? How does a drinker know? What is knowing? Who's the one that knows? Something even deeper, right? this prompted him because he left home very late in life. So he was making up for all the years, practicing very, very hard, driven by a sense of angst. Perhaps not so different than why all of you are here. We go through the routine of life. You know, we have our vexations, anxiety. We have our pain. We see people die. Death is all around us. Right? Someone who is alive, very animating. When you see that person lying in the coffin, it's like a shell. It's like, that's not the person I know. It almost looked like a mannequin. It almost looked like it's like makeup. It's like not there. Something is not there. But that can be me. Who is it that animates this? That's a fundamental question. Right? Of course, we can invest in other things outside of ourselves, denying our deep, deep, fundamental wish to know who am I? And invest in something else. You know, all the material wealth, all the material objects, all the things that veil over this fundamental truth. All the things that we do. All of our strategies. Not only we do this, the whole world is in on it. The whole world's matrix is in on producing this veil. Right? The mass media, the news, the this and that. So when he came across that story, it touched home for him. The reason he left home to become a monk was to practice. And then he came across that story. Who is it that knows? How do I know? I drink. Like all of you do. You drink water, don't you? How many of you don't drink water? You drink. Who is it that knows? Right? Who is it that feels a sense of their own subjectivity, their own kind of sense of who they are? How do you know if that's right? Because in different circumstances, you have different responses. You play different roles. In fact, we're a walking contradiction. What you feel and what you know don't match. Right? What you want to do, what you can't do, don't match. What you think you can do, you can't do it. For example, sit here 5 minutes. Stay on the method. 10 minutes. If you're really the master of yourself, can you do that? Can you tell yourself not to have scattered thoughts? Not to think of bad stuff. Obviously, you're not the master. Who the hell is the master then? You see? Who is it? That's the case. So this case gets rid of all the kind of cultural baggage and whatever. It goes right to the point. You know, he's speaking to monks. So monks know who Shakyamuni Buddha is, who Maitreya is, right? So he just goes right to cut through the chase. Let me read the case now. Now that you're all kind of psyched up, right? You know the context. Now you see. Dongshan Fa Yin, Grand Master Dongshan Fa Yin. The reason he's called Grand Master is because he's the Grand Master of the compiler, Wu Men. He's Wu Men's teacher's teacher. So he says, Grandmaster, Grandmaster Dongshan Fa Yan said, even Shakyamuni and Maitreya are his slaves. Tell me, who is he? Shakyamuni Buddha, Maitreya, are both outside yourself. It doesn't matter how saintly they may be, how holy they are. Who's the one who know them? Who's the one who sanctified them? Who is that? That is the most important thing. You see? Otherwise, you give up on yourself and you put your trust in something out there. It's not to say, you know, we shouldn't rely on the Dharma, we shouldn't rely on the teaching, the teacher, and so on. But all of these point to yourself. And then woman says, if you see him clearly, it's like meeting your father at a crossroad. You don't have to ask anyone else if it's him or not. Right? If you see into your true nature, awaken your mind, your heart. Fully realize right here, right now, in this moment. The master. Right? Then you're free. And when you do, you'll realize that it's not something so distant. It's not something that's so far away from you. It's something very familiar. Each and every moment of your life, you've known him. Just like each and every moment of your life, you know your father, right? Well, maybe the first 2 years, you don't even know who's taking care of you, right? But basically, you know your father, right? So someone who is, have seen the self nature, when they do see the self nature, something very obvious. Right? When someone talks about it, when someone talks about seeing self-nature, a person who has seen self-nature will know exactly what that person is talking about and whether that person is genuine or not. You know? So it's like someone talking about things in the palm of your hands. It's like Vijay, for example, trying to describe glasses in my hands. Yeah? Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know exactly. You don't have to ask someone else. So it's like meeting your father in this case. Meeting your father. You don't have to ask someone else, say, hey, is that my father? I'm not sure. You certainly don't need some kind of certificate, Dharma transmission certificate, framed in a piece of paper. Like, that's my father. That shows that I know my father. You don't need that. Do you need a certificate to prove that you know your father? Or you know your own backyard? Don't need it. But going to a teacher to verify is important. It's important. The purpose is to verify that it is personal experience or not. Because you can study someone else's father's photograph for a long, long time. You can do research. You can read about and then pretend that's your father. You see? You know what I'm saying? So going to a teacher, verify. Not really like, okay, I've seen my father. Is he real or not? Did I re-see him? It's not that. You may talk about something else. You may talk about something completely different. But just in the act of talking, the teacher and the student, saying a few words, the teacher will know whether self-grasping is there or not. Self-attachment is there. Because seeing the self-nature is to be free from self-grasping. It's to be awakened. Right? This means that it's not that we lose our identity, we lose our subjectivity. You can have subjectivity without self. Just means that how, to what extent is a person still under the influence of constructs, the narrative, the self-referentiality, all the things that's going on here, right? To what extent? So, masters have done this all the time. They don't need to talk about, so tell me about your experience. Don't need to. For example, Bai Zhang was talking with his teacher. His teacher said, Oh, look at those geese. The geese. They were out taking a walk. Bai Zhang said, where'd they go? And I know his teacher said, where'd they go? And Bai Zhang said, oh, they went away over there. And he yanked his nose. Where did they go? You know? They went over there. They're gone. There's past, there's present, there's future in there. There's grasping. The person is living completely under the cage of past, present, future. And gone from here. Self-referentiality. They're gone from here. If you're standing over there, you can say, they come here. Why should you respond to things always from the middle of yourself, judging everything from the middle of yourself, like, this is gone from me, that hasn't come yet, and this is, right? Very quick, you just see how that person operates in daily life. Don't need to take out a book. Or just ask, how are you doing? You know, see how they respond. So if a person truly is free from self-grasping, can that person operate? Sure. They can operate in a conventional world, no problem. They're probably more compassionate than most people. Most people operate out of self-interest. That interest may be beneficial, that is. For example, benefit whole beings, you know, your job entails you to help the elderly, you know, and so on. But still, decisions and judgment based on this, your own values, right? Meaning constructs. So being free from that, they can still operate in the world. They're more compassionate. They don't operate in a self-referential way. They operate in a kind of, if we were to describe it, right, using words and language, it would be like other-centered way. You see? Everything is there, except yourself is not there. It's not that nothing's there. No self doesn't mean nothing's there. It means everything is there. All connected. Yet no center. So what the person needs freely, to the best of our ability, can help. It's like a mirror. The mirror has no fixed image. The mirrors just have others. You see, it just reflects. So, that we understand. Buddhism has many words for that. One word is the mirror wisdom. Mirror, pervasive mirror wisdom. Right? It's another name to talk about no self. Another way to talk about who is he, this case talking about. Right? So all of us understands this, yet we still don't understand. We have no personal experience. You can study a lot. You can read about it, attend Dharma talks. The most important thing is to personally know who is he. Otherwise, all the studying just amounts to drawing someone else's bowl. Riding someone else's horse. Engaging with someone else's misdeeds. Involved in other people's dreams, basically. You know, all of us, the thing with us is we're not only living our dreams, our own fabrications and narratives about this and that. We're living someone else's dream. We're living someone else's dream about you. Do you believe that? Yeah. Intersubjectivity. Right? Our subject is related to others. Right? To the other person, your husband, your wife. So you play that. You're living other people's dream. Right? And fourth, if we don't recognize this personally, we're always minding someone else's business. You see? That's the four line. Drawing someone else's bowl, riding someone else's horse, meddling with someone else's misdeeds or affairs, and last one, minding someone else's business. A lot of people do this. A lot of Buddhist Zen practitioners do this. Right? They take measurements of what is believed to be good practice, and they start to measure other people. You know, whether other people live up to the standards, and they can't live up to the standards themselves. You see. So how do we do it? You want to know who you are? Raise your hand. I'm looking at the people who don't raise hands. Here's the advice I found. A letter of Dongshan Fa Yan for his student who plan on sojourning to other mountains and visiting other teachers. I'll translate this on the spot. This is his letter to his departing students. It's like last word of advice. The letter begins like this. Stick the two words of living and dying on your forehead. Resolve yourself to fully understand that all the time. If you just follow the crowd, mulling around every day, at the end of your life, the king of death Mara. Oh, I'm sorry, Yama. Is going to come to collect debts, karmic debts. At that time, don't tell I didn't warn you so. If you're genuinely engaging practice at all times, carefully, introspect, where is the place where I can gain power? What kind of practice that I do that doesn't gain power? Where are areas that I have failed? Where are areas where I have not failed or are good at? So practice involves, that's unquote, right? So practice involves kind of critical examination. It's not just kind of blindly just plunge forward. Right? Practice, practice, practice. You got to be wise. You have to be skillful in your practice. If you had a good sitting, examine that. What are the causes and conditions? If you hear good Dharma teachings and you're able to use it, how were you able to use it? If something you come across and you're not able to do well, why is it? See? So, quote, his letter continues. There's one type of person who every time they get on the cushions, they just sleep, become drowsy. Or, after they wake up, they just engage in scatter, wandering thoughts again. So alternation between drowsiness and scatteredness. And when they get off the cushion, they talk a lot of garbage. If you practice like this, even when Maitreya comes, you will still not be able to enter the path. Maitreya comes supposedly 56 million years, by the way. The Buddhist text calculation. The next Buddha. What you need to do is to bring forth this huato, critical phrase. In our case, tonight is Shakyamuni Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, are his slaves. Who is he? That's the huato, critical phrase. Right? So energetically bring forth this huato in the day, into the night. Uninterrupted. He's talking to a monk. So we have to translate this to our daily life as lay practitioners. It means wherever you have free time, whenever you have free time, bring it up. Definitely don't sit in the midst of stagnant non-doing. Soaking in the cushions. If you have a lot of wandering thoughts, temporarily put aside the method. Leave the seat. Take a nice stroll. Come back to the cushion. Open your eyes. Straighten up your spine. Bring forth the huato and feel coolness. How do you feel coolness? Anyone know? During sitting? What?
Focus on the breath.
let the bodily weight settle down, then the body will feel cool. That's one mistake that Huatou practitioners often have. They engage in asking the Huatou, asking the critical phrase, who's the master? Who is he? Who is he? And then all the energy starts to go up here. Right? Not cool. In both the literal sense and practical sense. Right? Gotta settle down. If you practice like this, there's bound to be a time where you will reach home. You will go home, true home. So, that's tonight's case. You have enough? I mean, do you have questions? Let me read it one more time so you get the flavor again. Dongshan Fahien said, even Shakyamuni and Maitreya are his slaves. Tell me, who is he? Woman said, if you see him clearly, it is like meeting your father at a crossroad. You don't have to ask someone if it's him or not. The verse. Don't grasp someone else's bow, or don't draw someone else's bow. Don't ride someone else's horse. Don't engage with someone else's misdeeds. Right? Don't criticize other people. And don't inquire into someone else's business. This advice, of course, is not literal. Right? Although sometimes, literally, it's useful too. Right? Especially if we're the type that very nosy. We get into someone else's business all the time, or we tend to find ourselves, we tend to judge other people all the time. Or we take someone else's knowledge as our own. We confuse our own personal experience with what the Buddha Sutra says. Not be satisfied with meager knowledge. It's nothing. It's not yours. That's like going to a restaurant, just reading the menu. You don't eat anything. And you feel that you can be full. You read the menu, read it. Are you full? So you have to personally experience. And how to practice? This is the most important thing in our lives. Right? In the midst of where everything veils this reality, we have to go through. And we're going against the stream. We're going against the stream. Very difficult. But it's worthwhile. We will have done what is the single most important task of being a human being. How to be a human being. How to live in this body. You see? We have the precious gift of our intelligence. We have the precious gift of many things in our lives. If we don't know how to use it, this gift of awareness, right? Awareness of the most fundamental thing. Who is aware? If you can't even do that, then you're just aware of other things, like everything outside you. It's like hand. All of our lives, we've been learning to use the hand to grab things, right? But no one has ever told us, like, what's the hand? You see? What is the hand? to know that. Then you can freely pick up something and freely put down something else. Otherwise, you're just defined by whatever's in your hand. If you grab a poor cup, you think, oh, I'm poor. If you grab a expensive thing, you think, oh, I'm very rich. See? All the constructs and narratives. That's not you. So, we have that gift of awareness. We must know who is aware. And don't give up. Right? It's not to mean that we lock ourselves in the mountain and just find out who we are. Who we are is discovered, realized, in the midst of interaction. The mirror can only know its true function by reflecting. You think a mirror lock himself up in a dark room and it's going, I'm going to find out what's my potential. It's not going to find out. So in the midst of daily life, your responses, your reactions to life, to people, to situation, that tells you where you are, who you are in that moment. It gives a hint. Hint of what? It's like trying to find an ox and you see hoof prints. That's finding the hint. How do we find hoof prints? Interacting with daily life. No escaping life. But not bound by all the multitude of things in life. In that process, things that come up emotionally, and in terms of your thoughts, your views, your values, everything that comes up, those are the things that you work with. Right? In the midst of interactions, that's where you discover. If you try to discover through analyzing, intellectualizing, that leads you further and further astray. So I don't mean to analyze everything that you do, to examine everything, think about it, dwell on it. The culprit that leads us astray in the first place is our attachment to words and language, our constructs. So you're going to rely on the thief to find out how much treasure you have in the house? No. You see? You've got to cut right through. In the midst of things come up, cut right through. Who is it who's getting pissed off now? Who is it who feels so proud and arrogant now? Examine it directly, right? The nature of this knowing. Like Fa Yin, first initial spark, drinking water, you know how to cope yourself. What is the nature of that knowing? Who knows? What is knowing? Cut right through. Right? Now, of course, you don't do this when your boss, when your teacher asks you to do homework, assignments, you're doing it. I can't give you the homework because I don't know who's doing it. Then you get an F. Right? Then you get an F. Not that. You still do the work, but right? When you discover, the four hints are, when you discover you're drawing someone else's bow, it's not yours. Or you're taking advantage of someone else's horse. Or you have mistaken someone else's horse to be yours. Or you start to kind of mingle with someone else's misdeeds. It's not your business. That's the fourth one. Started meddling in someone else's business, right? Their affairs. The stories and narratives. Right? The good and bad. Right in that moment, pick up huatou, critical phrase. And if you want to use huatou from this moment on, after hearing this case, you gotta have my permission. You need a foundation to do this. Right? Otherwise, it'll drive you crazy. But you need a good foundation. It'll come on a retreat. Okay? Any questions? But this standard is pretty high, right? Being able to be aware of awareness, like who is it that engaging other people's business? Who is it that talk bad about people? Who is it that meddles in someone else's mistake, judges other people's mistake? Who is it do that? Before that, we gotta drop a notch first. First, live your life in virtue. Virtue, virtue. Don't allow things to delude the mind. Right? How many of you received the precepts already? Ah, that's a guideline. Precept in Buddhism is not some kind of commandment you gotta follow so you can go somewhere else or you gotta please someone else. It's for you, it's a method. It's a method to gain clarity of your mind, clarity of yourself. Right? So at least very coarsely, your physical actions, in your speech, lives according to virtue. Right. Then you practice meditation every day. Your life becomes more stable and clear. On this basis, you examine this case. Right. It's very important. Very important. Without going through these steps, most people will get caught up with the narrative itself. They'll get caught up with their own constructs, own values, own ideas. It's like relying on a thief to try to find out how much the owner has. So, very important. And we ourselves live in virtue. Those around us will benefit just by ourselves living the right way, or rather the correct way. Right? Other people, when they come in contact with us, they will receive benefit just by our action, speech, our deeds. And then together, we'll be able to discover the master of Shakyamuni and Maitreya. Who's the master? The point, of course, is not really becoming the master of Shakyamuni Buddha or Maitreya. It's just see who you are. No? Did you have a question?
I did, but you answered it.
Okay. Wilson? Let me add a little note. When you have that good foundation, and you come on retreat to practice, you will be able to genuinely put the whole heart into the practice. Like what? Like putting the words life and death on your forehead. Right. Living, dying. Are you living? Are you really living? Right. Or are you living like a zombie, like a walking dead? Dying. Are you dying to those around you? Right. So living and dying, right here. With that kind of earnestness in practice. And no wandering thoughts. Imagine living in that state, at least for a short period of time during retreat. Would you be caught up with wandering thoughts? Oh, so trivial compared to your own life and death. That's the way to practice. Okay? Otherwise, we live a life in which we are already dead to all those around us. Yeah. People that we shut out, people that we don't know, people that we have our own construct projected onto them. That's like killing them. Right? We don't allow them to live. We have our own ideas onto them. Right? So, you see, if we truly want to live, what is true compassion? This is it. This is it. The next retreat I am going to be on will be in Taiwan. I will ask my Dharma teacher to lead the retreat, and I will assist him with the interviews and so on. This is in the Taiwan trip. So, if you're thinking about going, if you want to go, then you fill out the application this week. You don't worry about whether you have money or not. If you worry about money, here's the thing. If you worry about money, if your mind is with the money, then your mind has no practice. If your mind is sincere with practice, then you don't have to worry about money. If you worry about clothing, shelter, money, there's no path. There's no way, the Tao, whatever you call it. If your mind is set on the way, things will come. Okay? Okay? All right. Any questions? All right, have a good night. We have some cupcakes in the back.
I was going to say, this is not our usual night, the third Monday of the month for social, but we have a special celebration tonight. As a surprise to our teacher, and thank you for your teaching tonight. Glad we found out last week that he's gotten tenure at FSU, so we're celebrating his tenure. Oh. He stays.
Okay, enjoy the cake.
Congratulations.
It's a rare gift these days. Isn't it?
Unless you wanted to get out of Tallahassee.
I'm not going anywhere.
Unless.